ground chicken because, you know, chicken takes on any flavor. You can use ground turkey. I happen to use some ground turkey because I found that in the grocery store. I think it was down here at the training union. I was in a hurry, grabbed the ground turkey. I do usually prefer ground pork. But the nice thing about egg rolls is you can substitute, you can do whatever. I mean, it all tastes good in an egg roll wrapper and then fried in oil, right? But, yeah, usually I use some sort of ground meat like that. Never beef, though. I always like to have some sesame oil on hand. It just flavors the oil and the meat nicely, just that extra sesame flavor in the egg rolls. And then a little five spice powder, just a few dashes of that. Just give it some, you know, nice flavor with the different spices. Also, it's nice to have some fresh garlic and ginger. And I don't usually use powder for that. It's nice to just have, you know, and if you're someone who's always in a hurry, just get the garlic and ginger that's in the little jars. Now, you know, you can buy it in tubes and just a little quick little squirt and you're good to go. Also, some cilantro. Can't do without cilantro in our house anytime. We always have a bunch sitting around. I also use in my egg rolls shredded cabbage, and I do not buy the cabbage and shred it myself. I usually buy a bag or two, it depends on how many egg rolls I'm making, of the coleslaw. And it's got the carrots and everything already in it, and it's shredded perfectly for egg rolls. And I just use a bag of that. Also, the little cellophane noodles in the Asian section of the grocery store, I use some of those, and I just... I'll boil up some water and just put them in there for a few minutes and then bring them out and put them in the colander and let them drain. And I usually use my, because they're so long and stringy, it's hard to incorporate the noodles into your mixture and make it even. I usually just use my scissors and start cutting away at them and making them smaller. So they're easier to stir into your meat and cabbage mixture. But also some soy sauce, which really soaks into the cellophane noodles. You don't have to cook the cellophane noodles. Really, you just leave them in there for a few seconds into the hot water. And they're going to soak up a lot of the juice and everything from your meat and cabbage mixture as you put them in there. Some soy sauce. If you want to, you can use some sweet chili paste. Basically, you can use what you want to spice up your egg rolls. I definitely like the sesame flavor. I like to have chili and garlic. And ginger, I love to have the cilantro. I always like to have a little bit of soy sauce flavor in it as well. And may or may not want sweet chili paste. It just depends on how sweet it is. You know, and you might have a whole other way that you make yours. That's fine. But basically, I start off with a little bit of sesame oil in a pan. And I put my ground meat in there. Of course, this time I said it was ground turkey. And then to that, add your spices, your five spice, your... garlic, ginger, cilantro, and get that cooked up nice. You can add a little bit of soy sauce, but you definitely want to keep the heat down if you're cooking with soy sauce. You usually put it in toward the end of your cooking. You don't want to burn it. And then you add your whole bag of shredded cabbage. And I think I actually used two little packages of ground turkey. You know how they come, just in a small package. I think I used two of those, and then one big bag of shredded cabbage this time. And your cellophane noodles, you do not need a whole package. And this time I made the egg rolls. It's one ingredient that I didn't have. I just did without it. But I really try to have the cellophane noodles. And you definitely only need maybe a quarter of a package, maybe a half a package. And then you have mixed all that up. Then you add your soy sauce. And if you're using something like a sweet chili paste or any other sort of sauce to flavor it up, you'll do that there toward the end. And your cabbage cooks down. And it's just a nice mixture. And that's what I used for one package of egg roll wraps. I actually had some meat left over. And the family just put it in a container and set it aside, and we used it for something else. but 20 nice egg rolls. And then, of course, vegetable oil. You might want to use something else. Maybe you use peanut oil or something like that. But definitely something you can cook at a high heat. Olive oil doesn't really work for this. And yes, you can bake them. You can, you know, put some oil on the egg roll wrappers and bake them. But they really do turn out best if you just fry them in some oil. Make sure the oil is very hot before you put your first egg roll in there, or it just sits there, and starts soaking up all the oil before it ever cooks. And if it's really, really hot, immediately your egg roll starts cooking and, you know, everything else inside is cooked. You just really want to brown and crisp the egg roll and give it some flavor. And if you make enough of them, and then you can throw some of them in the freezer when they've cooled off. And then all you need to do when you want to have some egg rolls, just put them in the oven on 350 on a cookie sheet, and they brown up nicely and crisp up again. And we did that. There was one evening, we were just kind of a leftover evening, and I pulled the egg rolls out, made some rice to go with it, and we had egg rolls again, so it was perfect. I like to serve egg rolls with, like, butter lettuce, and because the leaves are so big, and the lettuce has just an amazing flavor to it. But that, or you could use red lettuce, leaf lettuce, or green leaf lettuce. Either, you know, the three of those work great. And then you can take a couple pieces of the lettuce, a nice big pieces of lettuce, and you just roll your crispy egg roll right up into that lettuce. And then you make yourself a dipping sauce. You can buy one already made, or you can make one. So you could take some sweet chili sauce and just add some, maybe some fish sauce and some lime and soy sauce, and that would make a good dipping sauce. Or you can make some Nook Mum, which would be like some sugar, some fish sauce, some lime, garlic, possibly some shreds of carrot, some red pepper paste, and a little bit of water, and you can make a nice dipping sauce with that. Either way, you do want to have a dipping sauce because it's just perfect with a dipping sauce. And there you go. You've got just a great meal. If you want to serve some rice or something on the side, you could do that too, but they're so good with lettuce. But don't wrap the lettuce around the egg roll and leave it sit on a platter and serve it that way, because then the lettuce gets all hot and wilty. This is something, if you're going to serve it with a group of people, you put the egg rolls on one platter on the table and a whole bunch of lettuce on the other, and maybe you could put some cilantro and some, maybe you could put some mint, sprigs of mint, some sprigs of cilantro, possibly some basil, and, you know, once you put your egg roll on there, you pile all the herbs on the top, roll it up. Let everybody do their own. And that makes a great dinner. And then, like I said, if you've made a bunch, you can put them in the freezer and bring them out again later on. And they're super good. And, of course, you know, they're good cold as well. It's a great snack. Kids can just go in the fridge, pull out a cold egg roll, and there you go. Finger food. So I made some of those. I'm going to make sure it's not another 4 or 5 months before I make them again, because they are so fun and easy. Let's see. Oh, I know. Evelyn asked if I would make a snack for school student council. They're selling in the hallway during conferences for elementary school to raise money for the elementary school. So I think I will make some bread pudding. I happen to have lots of bread around, especially now since I'm, you know, working with artisan bread in 5 minutes a day. I've been making bread like crazy, and, you know, sometimes we don't quite get through a whole loaf when I'm feeling like I want to make another loaf because this one's getting hard, or, you know, whatever. Or I'm really trying to get the hang of baking this bread. So, no, we're not wasting the bread. I always make something out of the leftover bread, croutons mostly. But bread pudding has been on my mind, and I thought, well, perfect, I can make some bread pudding for the school. And thinking I'm going to make it into individual muffin tins, So you can just take your bread pudding and eat it with your hands. And, or, if you want to make bread pudding, you can make it in your 9x13 or a small casserole dish. And it's always good with a sauce, like vanilla sauce, the Yukon Jack sauce. That is delicious, the caramel Yukon Jack sauce. Here's a recipe for old-fashioned bread pudding. And you need like about 4 cups of bread, 1/2 cup of raisins, 2 cups of milk, 1/4 cup of butter, and 1/2 cup of sugar, a couple of eggs, 1 tablespoon of vanilla, and also 1/2 teaspoon of ground nutmeg. The nice thing about bread pudding is you can put a whole bunch of stuff in it. You can put nuts in it. You can put cranberries. You can put all sorts of things. But this is a pretty basic recipe. So you are going to heat your oven to about 350 and combine your bread and your raisins in a bowl and set aside. If you were really thinking ahead of time, you could soak the raisins in something like rum or whatever. You could do that too. They'll have a little kick to them. Combine the milk and 1/4 cup of butter in a saucepan and cook that over medium heat for about 4 to 7 minutes until the butter is melted, and then pour that mixture over the bread and let the bread soak it up for about 10 minutes. And then you're going to stir in all the remaining ingredients, pour it into a 1.5-quart casserole, bake it for 40 to 50 minutes or until set in the center. And then if you're going to make a sauce, like a vanilla sauce, you would use like, once again, butter, 1/2 cup, 1/2 cup of sugar, 1/2 cup of firmly packed brown sugar, and some whipping cream, 1/2 cup, and 1 tablespoon of vanilla, like you're making a caramel sauce. And then you put all the sauce ingredients in a saucepan and stir it until it thickens and becomes a full boil, and then you stir in the vanilla very carefully. And then you just spoon that over the bread pudding. Delicious. Well, first of all, you'll scoop the bread pudding into individual cups or bowls and then serve the vanilla sauce over that. But like I said, I'm going to take this bread pudding and I'm going to put it in individual muffin tins, and it's really not going to take that long to bake. It's not going to take 40 to, 40 to 50 minutes. It's probably going to take more like 35 minutes to make individual bread pudding. So there you have it. That's Sunday dinner at Mindy's and what I'm going to be up to lately. Also, last night made just a little mini Thanksgiving dinner. That was kind of nice. But instead of using a turkey, I used a chicken that I had and took out the back and turned it over, pushed it down so it was just nice and flat, covered it with some rosemary salt and some pepper, lifted up the skin of the breast like I talked about a couple weeks ago, and this time I just had some thyme and I had some sage. The sage wasn't looking all that great, but I used it anyway because it has such flavor. It was starting to look a little dry, but that's okay. Threw that underneath the skin with some little pads of butter, and then on both sides of the breast, just really a lot of thyme. I had a whole bunch of thyme, and it was a nice-looking thyme. And then a little olive oil sprinkled over the whole chicken, salt and pepper, and I set that inside my Le Creuset roasting pan on top of some leeks that were actually getting old. I meant to use them for something and forgot, so cut the leeks so that they made a little roasting pan, or a little, what do you call it? Yeah, a roasting pan that you sit your turkey on. Well, I used carrots and onion and some of the leeks, and I just set the chicken on that and put it in the oven, 350 with the lid on it for about an hour, and it was done and beautiful. Took the lid off and let it brown nicely, so it was perfect. And it let off a lot of nice juice. I also took the turkey or the chicken back and, of course, made really good chicken stock. Threw in some more of that leek some carrots, celery, peppercorns, anything I had sitting around that was a scrap, really, and threw it in with the neck and the back and made some really nice stock for gravy. And just some garden potatoes. It was a variety. Boiled them up, didn't even bother taking the skins off, and smashed them down. But so there were some smashed pieces, some really creamy pieces, because I put in a lot of butter and a lot of salt and pepper, a little bit of milk. And then I also made some stuffing. This whole meal, believe it or not, was done in an hour and 15 minutes, a little mini Thanksgiving. It doesn't take much. So I quickly sautéed some onion and celery, some sage, a little bit of sausage, just a little bit for flavor, and then threw in the breadcrumbs and about 3 cups of chicken broth. Stirred all that up together and threw it in another roasting pan and put that in the oven with alongside the chicken. And there we go. We had stuffing and chicken in the oven ready to go. Mashed potatoes were going. Added some broccolini to that, and it was done. And we were eating and sitting down within an hour and a half. Had the gravy and the whole 9 yards. So that was very, very good. But coming up next, I just talked about kitchen scraps. Why throw away the scraps to the compost bin? Which we do. We love composting. We love giving it to our chickens. But you can make more food with some of those scraps, and I'm going to tell you what you can do with them. Also, my pie picks for Thanksgiving coming up next on What's for Dinner.
Oh, the line runs on the right, dear.
Welcome back to What's for Dinner. Today we're talking about using those kitchen scraps, especially when you're cooking so much food and you're going to have a lot of scraps like potato peels and carrot peels and things like that. But really, you can roast these potato peels. And actually, you can use them as a little hors d'oeuvre if you want to. If you're somebody who peels your potatoes before you boil them because you don't want the potato skins in your mashed potatoes, everybody has their own way of doing it, then all you need to do is quickly just toss them with a little bit of oil and some salt and pepper and throw them in an oven at 400. And so you can line a baking sheet if you want to, but toss the peels with some oil and seasonings, and olive oil would be good. Maybe even if you have a little smoked salt, that would be good. And then you can just toss them, roast them for about 15 to 20 minutes, and stir them about halfway through. And then you can sprinkle them with a little bit of cheese, maybe some scallions, some green onions, and yum. And there you have it. You can eat them immediately as you're getting ready for dinner. Sit them out on the table and people can snack on them. You can serve them with a dip, maybe some hot sauce. And if you do it, give me a call here at the radio station or email mindy@kfsk.org. Tell us how you liked them. So that's how you can use your potato peels. Because you don't usually put potato peels in vegetable broth. But one thing you can be doing with some of your vegetable scraps is make some vegetable broth. You know, you've got the end of your, most people don't keep the very ends of celery, and you can do that. Throw it in a pan of water and have that going on the stove top, just a pan of water, and you can throw in your celery. You can throw in, you can even throw in the onion skins, the onion paper, the onion skin. You usually take off like a layer, maybe sometimes two, right, when you're cooking your onion. That can go in there. Also, if you're peeling carrots, your carrot skins can go in there. You can take like the ends or the stalks from your parsley, or even the twigs from your thyme. And all of that can go in there along with a couple bay leaves. And, you know, a little bit of salt and pepper if you want. A little bit of olive oil. Also, you could just throw in some garlic cloves too. They don't even have to be taken out of the skins. You can crush them if you want to and just whip them right in there. And throw them right in. And before you know it, you have some vegetable broth. Cook that down a little bit, let it cool, put it in some Ziploc bags, label it, throw it in the freezer for when you need it. And vegetable broth, you need it a lot, really. You can use that for many, 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 many things. And then you don't have to throw the scraps away. Just make sure that they're clean really, really well. And yeah, there you go. That basic vegetable broth. Also, if you have, well, a lot of us make apple pies or apple this or apple that. A lot of apples are used over Thanksgiving, and you've got the apple peels and the apple core. And you can make apple cider vinegar with some of that instead of just throwing it away. All you need is a large bowl or a wide mouth jar, and you need your apple scraps. You need the cores and the peels. And you know, if you're buying organic apples, then yeah, that's great because you know they haven't been sprayed. But, you know, if you're not using organic apples, make sure you scrub those down really, really well. But we scrub our apples anyway, right? And you need a piece of cheesecloth for covering the jar because you don't want anything getting into it. And so basically, you don't mind if the scraps turn brown because that's what they're going to do because you know the apples turn brown right away when you let them sit for too long. Add the apple scraps to the jar, top it with a little bit of water, and you can continue to add apple scraps to it if you want to. And Leave some room for new scraps if you're going to keep adding. Cover it with cheesecloth, put it in a warm, dark place. And then the jar will kind of start to thicken, and it's going to start turning into cider vinegar and, fermenting. And you can use it. You can strain out the apple scraps, bottle the vinegar if you want to. And it's okay if it's a little bit cloudy, and that's fine. It's all good to be a little cloudy, but it's going to have great flavor, and it's going to be perfect for using in dishes. You can strain it if you want to through like a coffee filter. That's what I use a lot. It really catches everything and removes most of the sediment. So there you go. One way that you can use your scraps. Another way you can use your scraps is by making some apple skin jelly. You could do that and cook those down and actually make some jelly with that. And I don't have a jelly recipe here with me, but you can always look one up. And they have just enough flavor that you can make some great jelly with your apple scraps. And, of course, the turkey stock. This is after Thanksgiving. But don't forget, do not throw the turkey carcass away. Use it to make some turkey stock. You're going to be so happy that you did. And if you don't use it to make turkey stock, definitely offer it up to somebody else. Ask them if they want the turkey carcass to make some stock, because I'm sure there'll be somebody at your party that will want to have the turkey carcass. And, of course, you need some celery stalks, a couple carrots, a yellow onion, some bay leaf, some whole peppercorns, and some thyme. And throw that all into the water, and you'll probably want to break up the carcass so it's in pieces. You can't fit the whole thing and then cover it up with water. You do need to break it up. Make sure you add enough cold water to cover the bones by about 2 inches and bring to a boil. And then you can skim it occasionally to get the froth off the top. And so it takes about 2 to 3 hours, and you have a nice, rich stock. And you can strain it through a strainer into some heat-proof containers, let cool, and then refrigerator freeze. And a lot of times I'll just put into like a couple gallon Ziplocs and lay them flat, freeze them, make sure I label them, and I have them to use later on. And that's how you can use some of your scraps on Thanksgiving. If you have another idea for some scraps, email Mindy at kfsk.org and I'll share them. Let's get on to the pies. I love pies. I like fruit pies. You can always tell the kind of pies I like, because those are the recipes that I give you on What's for Dinner, right? I'm usually not a big fan of like peanut butter type pies, although every now and then I have a piece of that, and it's always one of those where you eat the last bite and then you're like, oh, I wish I wouldn't have eaten the last bite. But I never feel that way when I'm eating an apple pie or, one of my favorites, and it's going to be the first recipe I give you. This one's from food.com. This is just an old-fashioned banana cream pie recipe, because when I was a kid, that's what I loved. And although my mom never really made the banana cream pie, my Aunt Jackie always made sure there was one on the table at Thanksgiving because she knew how much I loved it. And so did my cousin Brian, who we are the same age, and we both love banana cream pie. So I'm going to give this recipe to you. It's not hard, not hard. You need a pie crust, a 9-inch pie crust baked. So whether you go out and buy it at the store or you make your own, they're not hard to make, especially when you're just putting them in the bottom. It's the top one that's always the difficult one, because you can piece that bottom one in. No one's going to know. 3 cups of whole milk and 3/4 cup of white sugar, 1/3 cup of all-purpose flour, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 3 egg yolks slightly beaten, 2 tablespoons of butter, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, and 3 bananas. So have your pie shell ready. It's already going to be baked. And remember, when you're baking those, if you're making a fresh pie shell, you're going to put some pie weights in there, or you're going to, you know, some aluminum foil over it, and then some beans, put it in the oven and bake it for about 20 minutes. And that's how you bake your pie shell. But have it ready, and then in a large saucepan, you're going to scald the milk. In another saucepan, combine sugar, flour, and salt, and then gradually stir in the scalded milk. When you're scalding milk, you bring the milk to a boil, and then you lower the heat, and that's pretty much scalding. And then over medium heat, stir it constantly and cook until it thickens. The sugar and the flour and the salt, they're going to thicken that right up, and then cook for about 2 minutes longer. Here it says cover, and then stirring occasionally, cook for 2 minutes longer. Then in a small bowl, have the 3 egg yolks slightly beaten ready. Stir in a little bit of the, you're going to temper it, stir in a little of the hot mixture into the beaten yolks, and then stir the yolks into the hot mixture. Cook for another minute and remove from heat and blend with the butter and vanilla. And let it sit until lukewarm. When it's ready to pour, slice the bananas, scatter in the pie shell, and pour the warm mixture over the bananas. And then, of course, if you want to make the meringue, you can use that with the leftover egg whites. Otherwise, you could just use whipping cream and pipe that on top of your pie after you've thrown it in the refrigerator for a little while and let it cool and set, and then pipe on your whipped cream. Delicious. I was watching a show last night, Mind of a Chef, and there was this one chef. She's in New York, and I've actually seen her website, but she was talking about bananas and how bananas are different stages, and really the best banana for baking are the ones that are black and actually oozing out liquid. And she said that's when bananas are their best for baking. She made a banana cream pie that she's famous for, and she did it all in the blender. Everything just went into the blender, including the banana that was dripping right into the mixture. And then she put it on her stovetop and brought it to a boil, and it thickened. And one thing she did that, you know, I wouldn't really do is she added some yellow food coloring to make it bright yellow. And then she layers half of it into the pie plate with the pie shell, and then she puts like another stage of banana, which would be the banana that's brown spotted. She slices that up and she puts that in the middle, and then she pours over another layer of the cream. And then that's her pie. But it looked beautiful, really, really did. And she put that into like a cookie crumb crust. So there you have it. Either way, all banana cream pies are delicious. You know, you don't think about it on Thanksgiving a lot, but, you know, you really stick with your, you stick with some of your memories, and those are the things that you want. And, of course, I like old-fashioned pecan, and probably because my dad, it's his favorite pie, so we grew up with pecan pies in our house. We always had one, even when it wasn't Thanksgiving. We had pecan pies sitting around, and this pecan pie doesn't use any corn syrup. So here's a recipe from the Public Kitchen. And this is by Catherine Spires. So it uses 1 cup of maple syrup, 1 cup of light brown sugar packed, half a cup of heavy cream, 1 tablespoon of molasses, and 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter cut into half-inch pieces, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 6 large egg yolks slightly beaten, 1.5 cups of toasted pecans. You can chop them if you want to, if you don't want them whole. Maybe that's what bothers you about pecan pie, the fact that they're whole pecans. Maybe it's the corn syrup that bothers you. I'm not sure. 1 9-inch unbaked pie shell chilled in the pie plate for 30 minutes. And so you're going to make the filling. You're going to adjust your oven to 450 on the lowest rack. Heat the sugar, syrup, cream, and molasses in a saucepan until the sugar dissolves, about 3 minutes. remove from the heat and let it cool for about 5 minutes. Then you're going to whisk in the butter and the salt into the syrup until combined, and then whisk the egg yolks in. Then scatter the pecans in the pie shell, pour the filling over, and place it in a hot oven. And you're going to reduce it to 325. Then bake it until it's set in the center, and it's just going to jiggle lightly. 45 to 60 minutes. Cool the pie on a rack for an hour. This is one of those pies you don't really eat right when it comes out of the oven, for sure. Not like an apple pie. And then refrigerate until set, 3 hours and up to 1 day. Bring to room temperature before serving. And that's a pie without the corn syrup. Old-fashioned pecan. Delicious. I have two more pies to talk about. Actually, I definitely want to mention the sweet potato pie. I like pumpkin pie, but I love sweet potato pie. And sweet potatoes, they're boiled, they're peeled, they're mashed together with some butter and sugar, milk, and eggs, and then seasoned with nutmeg, cinnamon, and vanilla. Whoa, yum, so good. And you need one sweet potato, a 1 pound sweet potato. And they are, the longer sweet potatoes, they're about 1 pound. A half a cup of butter softened, a cup of white sugar, a half a cup of milk, 2 eggs. Honey would be really good in this if you want to figure out how you're going to change the 1 cup of sugar into honey. You can do that. Half a teaspoon of ground nutmeg, a half a teaspoon of cinnamon, and some vanilla extract. You need your unbaked pie crust. So boil your sweet potatoes in the skin 40 to 50 minutes or until done. Alternately, you could bake them in an oven for about an hour on 425. Remove the skin and then break apart the sweet potato in a bowl. Add the butter and mix well with a mixer so it's really smooth. Then stir in the sugar, the milk, the eggs, the nutmeg, the cinnamon, and the vanilla. And pour the filling into an unbaked pie crust. Bake at 350 for 55 to 60 minutes or until the knife in this, you insert the knife, it comes out clean. And it's going to puff up like a souffle and it'll sink down when it cools. Maybe have that little crack at the in the middle, which is totally fine. And there you have it, a sweet potato pie. If you're so used to pumpkin and never tried a sweet potato pie, you know, in my house at my mom and dad's, no sweet potato pie. No. It was always pumpkin. So it was nice to learn that I could actually make a pie with sweet potato. So give it a try if you've never done it. And if you are somebody who just haven't mastered the making of the pie crust and getting it into a pie plate, there are lots of free form ideas for pies like apple tarts, also cranberry. Well, I've got this great recipe for a cranberry pie too, but freeform apple tart is so easy for those of you who are beginners because you can just make your pie crust and roll it out. And if you have like one of those plastic chopping boards that you would, you know, cut chicken on or vegetables on or whatever, you can slide one of those on right underneath there and like pick up your pie crust and stick it on a baking sheet. And that's all you need to do. If you can just get the crust onto a baking sheet, you're good. And if you have to take it apart in pieces and then piece it together on a baking sheet, that's fine too. Or maybe you just buy your pie crust. But the freeform apple tart is so easy. You start with your crust, get that onto your baking sheet, and then you need 2 to 3 large apples and 2 to 4 tablespoons of brown sugar. Depends on how sweet your apples are. Half a teaspoon of almond extract, 1/3 of a cup of sliced toasted almonds, and a couple tablespoons of butter cut into cubes. And then this has a glaze to it, so 1/4 cup of preserves, apricot for like a yellow orange glaze, or if you want like a pink glaze, you'll want to use like raspberry preserves. And then a tablespoon of water or orange flavored liqueur such as Cointreau or triple sec. You know, that's optional. But you can buy little containers of it when you're at the liquor store. So you're going to preheat your oven to 400. You're going to form a little shallow lip around your crust by folding over the edges of each side. And, you know, you can make this round or you can make it rectangular, however you want to do it. So you just have like a little edge, basically. That's all you have. And it doesn't have to look super fancy. You're going to prick the dough with a fork. And then you're going to refrigerate it for about 10 minutes. While it's in the refrigerator, you're going to peel, core, and quarter the apples. You don't even have to peel the apples for this. Sometimes those tarts look really good with like some green skin and some red skin. Think about that. It's just a little bit of color on the edge of it, your apples. But slice them into 1/8 inch or smaller wedges, and you can really make them, you know, if you have a mandolin, you can really slice it thin. And then in a medium bowl, you're going to toss the apple slices with the sugar and the almond extract. And then remove the tart crust from the refrigerator and just neatly arrange the slices, overlapping them over the crust. And dot the top with the butter. Bake for 45 to 50 minutes and remove it halfway through. Sprinkle on the sliced almonds. And when the crust is golden brown and the apples have color, you remove it from the baking sheet and set it on a wire rack. And then while it's baking, you can prepare the glaze in a small saucepan. You just bring the preserves and a little bit of water, or the liqueur if you're using it. You boil it over medium heat. Cook it for just a couple minutes until it thickens. And then if it has big chunks in it, you can always put it in a blender. Wait for it to cool a little bit, and then puree it a little bit so it's not, you don't have these big chunks in your glaze. And then you can add, put it right over the top of your tart, brush it with the glaze, and slice and serve immediately, or not, or just keep it there room temp and let it sit there. And if you use green apples and red apples, you can have like the alternating red and green. That would be nice. Are you ready for one more pie? This pie is from the Smitten Kitchen, and I found this pie. I had to share it with you. This is from Smitten Kitchen. It's a cranberry pie with a thick pecan crumble. I love this. It basically, you're just using a regular pie crust, but the filling is cranberries, sugar, some orange zest, clementine zest would be fine, some salt, and some cornstarch. So it is a cranberry filling. And then you're putting a streusel on the top. Some rolled oats, some oat flour, some all-purpose flour, 1/2 cup, 1/3 cup of granulated sugar, 1/3 cup of light or dark brown sugar, some cinnamon, coarse sea salt, 1/4 teaspoon. If you don't have sea salt, don't worry. Just use regular salt. 3/4 cup of pecans, toasted if you have the time. And then 6 tablespoons of unsalted butter, melted and cooled. And then you're going to sprinkle some powdered sugar over all of that. But so basically, you're just making the filling. You combine all the ingredients to make the filling. And in a medium saucepan over medium heat, about 5 minutes, of course, the berries will start to begin to leak their juices. Cook and stir for about 5 more minutes. You can crush them a little bit if you want to with a potato masher. And let them cool. So basically, all that just goes in together for the crust or the filling. Then for the topping, grind the oats in a food processor, add the pecans, add all the rest of the ingredients for the topping, which is the cinnamon, the salt, and the, you know, butter. And you're going to sprinkle that over the cranberry filling and bake the whole pie for 45 to 50 minutes. And you can put foil over it if you need to, if it's browning too quickly. Transfer to a wire rack and shower it with a little powdered sugar when it's done and some whipped cream. One thing I like about this pie is this beautiful red layer. beautiful bright red cranberry layer, and then the streusel topping over the top. And of course, you don't have to make another pie crust for the top. It's easy just to sprinkle on a topping. This is from Smitten Kitchen. You can check it out. Cranberry pie with thick pecan crumble. And those are my pie picks. My pie picks for Thanksgiving. And also, coming up next, my pick for the drink of the week up next, right here on What's for Dinner.
Hello, Daddy. This is Louis, Daddy. Mighty glad you're back where you belong. You're looking swell, darling. I can tell, darling. Keep blowing, keep blowing.
Support for What's for Dinner on KFSK comes from Keto's Cave and Liquor Store with a large selection of beers, wines, brandies, and rums to cook with, accompany any meal or potluck, or for mixing in a new favorite drink and hosting wine tasting on Friday evening, December 5th. Keto's Cave and Liquor Store, open 7 days a week.
Now they never go away again.
Here's an elegant cocktail, perfect for the holiday parties. And this is a poinsettia. You need, for this one, some champagne, some orange liqueur, and some cranberry juice. Very easy. And this is also easily can be served for people who don't drink alcohol. You just take out the champagne and the orange liqueur, of course, and serve it with something else bubbly, even if it's a Martinelli's something, and mix in some cranberry juice. It'll be just as delicious. This calls for 3 ounces of champagne, a half of ounce of orange liqueur, and 3 ounces of cranberry juice. Pour the chilled cranberry juice into a champagne flute. Add the Cointreau or Triple Sec or Grand Marnier. Stir, top with champagne, and serve right away. Very easy and elegant. And we love drinking little drinks out of champagne flutes, don't we? Which brings me to remind you, now is the time if you're going to make some sort of liqueur or flavored vodka to give away for the holidays or just use in your own holiday drinks if you're going to have a holiday party. Now is the time to make cranberry vodka or some other flavors that you want to make. So easy. You need to buy, of course, some large bottles of vodka. But if you want to make cranberry vodka, you just need some bags of cranberries, or if you want to go out and get some wild cranberries, you can do that too. But I just use some sugar, open up the bag of cranberries, and heat those on the stove. The cranberries will start to pop, just like we were talking about with the cranberry pie and sugar. And then I also use some orange peel and mix all that together, and then I put that into a huge gallon jar. And to that, I add, you might want to add some more spice too, like some clove or something like that. Then you add your vodka to that and put the lid on it and let it sit for about 3 weeks. And once it's done, you have amazing cranberry vodka, and it's already sweetened and everything. So you have to be careful. Make sure you're not drinking too much of it. But and make sure you put it away so the kids don't think it's some sort of punch. But perfect for the holidays or to give away in little bottles to your friends. And you can make other flavors as well. But that's how you'd make the cranberry. That's how I make it. It's so delicious. And then all you need to do is come up with some beautiful jars. Or you can even use ball jars, for that matter. People don't mind getting gifts in ball jars. And that's it for the drink of the week.
¶¶
That wraps up this week's What's for Dinner. Next week, my special guest is Dan Shumsky. He's the author of Will It Waffle? It's a cookbook using your waffle iron. Check it out next week on What's for Dinner. Thanks for joining me today, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy eating.